I just believe in the process, and we're going to win going through the process.
Now, Bills Mafia, it's time for the main event. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Bills Mafia, have you missed us? We've been away for a week, but Robin, Mark, myself, Matt are here to talk Bills with a UK twist. And was it 2-0 now? Week two in the books.
Yep.
A demolishing of what, the number one seed in the AFC last year.
And then they definitely weren't last week.
Yeah, it didn't play like it either.
But I mean, to start off 2-0, and obviously it's going to give us a huge boost on there. I mean, what's your guys' initial take, even before? Because I know we didn't do a preview show for it. What's your take before going into the game? And obviously reflecting now on what we've got after, when we actually know we won 41-7.
My other podcast is the guy who runs the UK Titans page, the Transatlantic Titans, who has been on this very show.
Yes.
And so Adam, shout out to you, Mr. Foxcroft. He went into it absolutely full of pessimism. This is exactly the type of game that he thought was going to take place. The questions that get asked at the minute is, how can you stop the Bills? He didn't believe that they would have any answer. And so it proved. They're not playing very well at the moment. They're on a bit of a downward spiral, lost a bit of spark. And with the way that the Bills are playing, you know, to start 2-0 is impressive. But for it to be against the Super Bowl champions and the AFC's number one seed from last season, you know, we're not beating the Texans and the Cowboys here, are we? You know, yeah. we're beating two top level teams. But this was, I think, from a Titans fan perspective, especially, this was kind of all too likely as it was going to be. This result didn't surprise me. The Rams one did, as we know. This result, I kind of expected this. When you take into account that the Titans have lost five of their top six yardage getters from a receiving point of view in the offseason, they're a team that is very, very one-dimensional now, and finding it easy to stop them.
Yeah. Robin?
Yeah, well, what is it now? Combined aggregate score now 72-17. And I think if there's one thing that even might start a tremor, I still think the offense can get better.
Yeah.
It was a 10-7 game coming up to half time, and they got the seven before half time that probably made it, you know, a bit more of a fair reflection. But the Titans were hanging around at 10-7. I always thought the Bills would probably find something in the second half. But the fact that they still haven't actually started completely brilliant or consistently brilliantly.
Yeah.
Because their opening possessions have always been good, but then they've kind of just gone away a little bit. Yeah. I mean, again, we're slightly nitpicking here because they got 31 and 42 points respectively. The defense, almost no notes. They seem to be mauling physical, like everything we wanted them to be at the end of last year, rushing with four, pressuring with four, having the linebackers coming up in support, taking the pressure away from the cornerbacks. There's almost nothing else to say about the defense.
Last season, we're not stopping Derrick Henry for 25 yards.
No.
It just doesn't happen. Yeah. This season, it does.
Yeah.
And it, like, I'm almost, it's bizarre to be so confident, but I'm not worried about any aspect of our play at the moment. The only thing that I'm sure we'll get onto it, the only thing that slightly concerns me is the injuries.
Yeah.
But the way that we're playing, the way that Von Miller has invigorated that defense to be, you know, anything that can get to the quarterback rushing four can stop the run, if we can stop the run.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how you stop the Bills at the minute.
You really can't, because the offense are going to get you points.
Yeah.
Your defense is keeping teams to 7 and 10 and 14 points. They're not going to get 17.
as they said in commentary yesterday, as they said in during the game, if we can keep the defense, if the defense can keep the other team to scoring less than 27 points, we're winning the game.
Yeah.
Because we've done that for our previous, I think, was it 8 or 9 games now? We've scored over 27. So if all we need to do is stop a defense scoring 27 points, and we're winning.
Well,
that's scary.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about obviously stopping the run and all that. Obviously, last year, Henry against us actually went for 143 yards, only 25 yards here. If people do subscribe to Athletic and see the Joe Buscaglia article that comes out with his observations, the one thing that interests me, obviously, we played 4 defensive tackles, Daquan Jones, Jordan Phillips, Brandon Bryant, and the rookie CJ Brewer. In the run game, prior to when they pretty much stopped all the starters and actually went with the backups on there, so pre-garbage time, how are those 4 yards per attempt against the run? Who do you think was the best out of Jones, Phillips, Bryant, and Brewer?
The fact that you're asking the question leads me to think that you're being contrarian here, Matt, and it'll be Brewer.
Yeah,
no.
I would have said Jones.
I would have said Jones as well. Yes, I would have said Daquan Jones.
If you play tactically, yes, you've got to think you wouldn't have mentioned it unless it was an unexpected answer.
I would have said Jones as well.
Well, CJ Brewer, he had 3.5 yards per attempt against him. He had 4 rushes towards him and given up 14 yards. Third place was Daquan Jones, 2.3 yards per attempt, 18 yards against. Second was Jordan Phillips, 1.8 yards per attempt, 16 yards against. And Brandon Bryan, 1.5 yards per attempt and 12 yards against.
Which is mental, right? I mean, 1.5 yards against a second, third string guy against the NFL's leading rusher last season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just unbelievable.
And without Ed Oliver and Tim Settle and Trey White.
Put into perspective, if you do the defensive tackle pairing, so Daquan Jones, Jordan Phillips, together, yards per attempt, 3.5 yards. Daquan Jones, Brandon Bryant, minus a yard. Daquan Jones and CJ Brewer, 1.5 yards per attempt. Jordan Phillips, Brandon Bryant, 0 yards, pretty much, per attempt. And Brandon Bryant and CJ Brewer, 5.5 yards per attempt.
It's got to be one of the most improved kind of areas of play in the NFL to go from being the team that was, you know, everyone can run on the Bills. That was that, you know, they can't run the ball and everyone can run on them. Well, we can now stop the run and we can bloody run it. So it's
and I think
I don't know how you stop us. I love it.
I think Brandon, and obviously Brandon Bryant, he's a second year guy, second or third year guy. He's on the practice squad. So when you've got someone like him on your practice squad that you can bring up, if Settle or Oliver go down, I think I'm happy and comfortable with them bring Bryant up, knowing that just by this stat against one of the league's best running backs, that you've got that capable backup in there to do his job. And the fact that he was involved in the lowest yards per attempt for in DT pairings and obviously individually shows that this team and Brandon Bean does have that eye and this coaching staff is getting the best out of all these players.
Yeah. It also means you don't have to rush players back. You don't have to play players hurt. Like if Ed Oliver's not quite ready to play on Sunday, he's pretty confident about the guys that are coming in. Tim Settle as well. And it's having that kind of beast mentality culture that they've got. Everyone is just coming in and playing out of their skins. I mean, you see, we don't want to be here all night just talking about the game that's gone, but you see like the tackles Benford was putting in. He's just like a 6th round cornerback, for Christ's sake, and he's taking Henry down. And it's absolutely just flooding through the team. You can see everyone is absolutely up for this.
And that's the benefit, right? They covered this during the game, isn't it? To get that team ethos that isn't something that you can necessarily easily get long-term through free agency. This is done by drafting the right guys, keeping them around, developing them and creating that, you know, that process within the Bills. And we've got more players that have played matches and actual games that we have drafted comfortably than any other team in the league.
Yeah, 688.
Something like that. It's crazy. This was amazing.
Since 2017.
Yeah, most of the
688 games played.
Yeah, most
five
of the
years. So we, 5 years, hasn't it?
We're getting guys like Brian that we drafted a couple of years ago, as you said, but something like more than that, 2018.
Oh, we didn't draft him. He was a free agent signing,
well,
I think.
There you go. So getting in guys that have been there for that length of time, and they're in the system with those guys that have been around, that are drafted into this, like, this culture, and we're cultivating this team ethos and this team spirit by doing it the right way. And I think it's really hard to get any other way, having the consistency with coaching, the consistency with players. There's not a massive turnover of players every summer. It makes a massive difference. And it's finally, you know, we get to this team now to a point whereby there are people who know a damn sight more about the NFL than I've ever known, are saying that, you know, we're such comfortable favourites to win the Super Bowl, they should just give it to us. I'm fine with that, by the way.
I would like to play along for each week and see some Bills wins. But yeah,
the thing is that you said earlier on is exactly right. Like the first half, we're not even playing that well in games at the moment. We're doing all right, but we're what, 10-7 and 10-all in the two games we've had. Then third and fourth quarter, we've blown teams away. But if we can get that form, and like, yes, I know we always score a touchdown on our first drive. That's just something that we do. We're never going to stop doing that. That's just how history is now. We score touchdowns on our first possession. But if we can keep doing that for the first half, you know, it's not good for my fantasy team when you've got Josh Allen and you lose a game by 4 points because he sits the final quarter. but I'm more than happy. I will give up winning my fantasy league if it means that Josh Allen has sat on his ass for a fourth quarter every game because we're 30 points up.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I mean, it's good to know. I mean, let's say, since the last couple of games, the two games we played, we've outscored the opponents 45-0 in the second half. We've not let them score in the second half.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we haven't conceded in the second half.
Yeah.
Mental.
Forcing four turnovers as well. And obviously, at Allen's last four games, including the two playoff games, you just see how he's actually gone. He's got a 76% completion percentage, averages 312 yards per game, 16 pass touchdowns, 2 interceptions. And since the beginning of 2021, leads the NFL with touchdowns off play actions and of 10 plus air yards with 20 and 29 respectively.
His decision making and poise, you'd never for even half a second even worry about any of his throws now. He's almost, I mean, again, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, two games. Yes, we know. Stay healthy. But he's almost unplayable when he's got it in the pocket and if he's got enough time in the offensive line. You just can't cover everyone. And Diggs is, I mean, quick word for Stephon Diggs, playing as well as I've ever seen him play. He's almost uncoverable. So you've got an almost unplayable quarterback with an uncoverable wide receiver one, playing without Gabe Davis, and with McKenzie and Crowder chipping in, and Kumaro made a couple of catches.
Yeah, good old Kumaro. Good job we picked him, eh?
Well, the Panthers, so there goes that. It is good. I mean, I say, you'll probably guess who the other player is, but there's only ever one other player in the NFL other than Stephon Diggs to catch 3+ touchdowns on multiple Monday Night Football appearances.
Wow. It's a guess, but I'm going to say Jerry Rice. Yeah.
Both of them have 2 games of multiple 3+ touchdowns on multiple Monday Night Football games. It just shows, A, how good...
We've got another Monday night one coming up later as well, haven't we? Don't we play? Do we play the Patriots on a Monday night? Do we have another?
I think so. I think it's a Monday night.
That was our first Monday night win, also in like something time.
Yeah,
at home in like for God knows how long.
Well, I think it was Broncos in '94 or something.
Yeah, first home Monday night win in that amount of time. Mental, yeah. Well overdue. And admittedly, that's because we went an awful lot of seasons without having any Monday night games.
Yes.
Because no one wanted to watch that shit.
I think there was like a sort of contractual game against the Jets, wasn't there? Sort of, all right, lads, let's just get through this one.
Let's get through it. Oh, God.
Moaning their way through it. Yeah.
But no, it's, I mean, there were a lot of positives out of that game. I mean, obviously, we touched on obviously the injuries being a... being one of the downsides on there, but I can see how Dorsey's actually we haven't lost a beat with Dorsey in as defensive coordinator. I think it was,
if anything, he's brought more of a rushing attack to the more balanced than it was previously.
The only thing about that one I kind of iffy about was that Singletary, he had a few good plays like in the first couple of drives. But then they shied away from him and actually used more Moss and Singletary until like 5 minutes before half time, until about halfway through the third quarter, where they just went for 21 straight passes in there. The fact that if Singletary has been getting you those yards and actually showing a bit more patience, waiting for those gaps to evolve, you should really be playing the hot hand. I think that's the one thing that's going to let our run game down a little bit. The fact that, yes, we've got a nice three-headed monster. We can use them in different plays, short yardage, pass catching in case of James Cook. But if Singletary is your number one, actually shown a little bit of oomph in his plays, you should still ride him a lot more. Maybe then, if he's injured, then sub out for Moss or Cook. I think once they took Singletary out and replaced him with Moss and Cook, the run game kind of slowed until they started the pass. And then obviously towards the end, James Cook came back in and actually ended up being the leading rusher for the team.
He was playing against backups though, wasn't he? So you would expect him to do all right. I always think that I like the fact that there's the running game that they're going to more. I still think that Dorsey knows what our strengths are, and that's you put the ball in Josh Allen's hands and let him find Stephon Diggs or let him run it himself. That's our strength. So if we're running it more, I think the reason that we're doing it is to set up the pass. It's to set up play action. Yeah. And it's much harder to tee off. And for those coverage is much harder when you think that there's a chance that you might be going to rush. The linebackers have to step up to protect it. And it leaves those gaps in there for Dawson Knox, those little passes that Josh Allen loves to people like Isaiah McKenzie, that 15 to 20 yard passes, much easier to do that if there's the threat of the run. So that I've seen it in the two games that they've done so far. They've gone run heavier earlier than we saw last season, especially because that creates the threat. And once that's there, then the play action gets going. The linebackers have stepped up. The safeties are sitting a little bit deeper. The gap is there every time. And it's what has then paid dividends when we've, I guess, got into the second half, because the gaps are then all over the place and they don't know what they're doing. Get a couple of touchdowns down and before you know it, you're out of it. Yeah. So I think it's nice to be able to say, oh, we've got this balanced rush. It's never going to happen. They're running to make passing easier and it's working at the minute. So I kind of like, to your point, I sort of don't care who they're giving it to, because if you're keeping them all fit for towards the end of the season, that's a benefit. We're not giving it to like Singletary, so he's got 40 touches a game, and then by week 12 he's knackered. Spread the load, fine with that, because all you're doing is creating the threat. Because we know we're not a rushing team, unless it's with Josh Allen.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got to say, you got Reggie Gillum coming out there. Fullbacks matter.
Fullbacks do matter. Yeah,
yes.
Beautiful. Saw the clip of Josh following him in as well, into the end zone as well. So it's like a real team celebration.
I was praying they made that catch in what was it, like the third quarter?
The high one.
Over top.
Oh,
if you made that, then I think everyone would be a Reggie Gillum fan.
Just give up if that one. You got to have one that they don't catch, don't you? There's always got to be one that's a talking point. Yeah,
I think it's actually really interesting. Where you talk about Josh Allen following him into the end zone, how many times do you see like Aaron Rodgers or one of these other ones throw this amazing ball and then they're all celebrating in the end zone and he's just trudging off?
Yeah.
I love the fact that Allen's down there celebrating with the rest of them. It's that spirit that I think is making a massive difference.
Yeah. Because he is just one of the guys, isn't he?
Yeah, he loves it. He just loves it. He just loves playing it.
About Russell Wilson wanting like his own office or something in like kind of in the, and it's a bit like, come on.
Yeah.
And to see that Josh is the one thing, and he was talking about how Dawson Knox is around his house kind of thing, and they play video games around his house. That's not a PR line. You believe that they do kind of hang out and they do get on, and he is just a big kid. And Diggs, talking about Christmas cards and growing old together, Diggs was on this podcast the other day because he was like they became best friends within 10 minutes of meeting each other. And you can just see it and you can absolutely see it. And why wouldn't you run through walls for Josh Allen? Why?
No. Yeah, you would.
Well, three of us would, wouldn't we? We don't even know him. But we would, wouldn't we? You know, he just does that.
Yeah. There's something about him. There's something. He's got that something special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got there's the leadership thing, hasn't he? You just think, I'll work for you. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Tell me where to go. I'll do it.
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing really we've got to talk about just before, well, a couple of things. One a little bit minor, and another thing just before we go on and review, preview the Dolphins game. Obviously, how good this defense is, we could touch back on it, especially when you've got, for the second part, you had both Benford and Elam out on the boundary. Obviously, the injured Dane Jackson didn't help. But what Milano and Edmonds managed to do, we seeing Russo now break out and actually have those games thanks to Von Miller's influence. But then again, you still can't discount Jordan Poyer in this thing. It's just how we've really suffocated these offenses. And fair enough, the Titans have lost some of their good players. I mean, Robert Woods is still a decent wide receiver in there. Treylon Burks has very good potential for a first round pick on there, but having that, and obviously what Benford's done, especially on that tackle on Derrick Henry, where I think the last time Derrick Henry was running towards a Bills cornerback last season, he was actually shoving Josh Norman out of the pitch.
Yeah.
Out of the stadium.
And Benford comes in, bang, takes him down for a loss. So
there's this real, it's a proper unit. It's great.
Mm. But the one thing I've got to talk about, we finally punted.
Yes.
Yeah, and apparently that's now a legitimate tactic because they can't even catch him.
forget about the punt. Just let him punt it.
Let Sam Cook. Sam Martin's the new man. You know, for like
what was it? He had two muffs.
Three punts, two muffs.
Yeah,
it's just. I mean, you're thinking, can you beat the Bills on special teams? Fucking hell, no, you can't.
Not really. Tyler Bass missed nothing. No problems with the holds either. Yeah. Come in last minute with a couple of problems. I haven't had a single problem with an extra point or a field goal either. So they kind of covered there and had some really nice hang time because they were bombing down, waiting for the guy, the Muffet. And that's why the Muff happens, isn't it? Because you've got a maniac running at end over end ball. You know, you're gonna get a shellacking.
So supposedly with him, it's the way he kicks it makes it do that end over end thing a lot, which is why when you look at the first one, he completely misjudged the flight of it. And apparently that's because of the way he kicks it, does this weird, like it doesn't just fall out of the air as you would expect. It like does this turny thing. And I'm all for that. You know, it's just another thing.
Because
stupid things like that. Now it's starting to get reported that his punts are really hard to catch. That starts to get in the returners' heads. He's coming out to. Now I'm expected to catch this. Now, Christ, they're all running at me. Oh, apparently this is going to be really hard. And he starts overthinking it. And then you know you just hope let's keep it going. More muffs, please.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Before we do this, have you got any? We're going to make this a weekly thing after every game, the stock up and stock down So each of us will give two stock up, two stock down, for each game. If they match, they match. Means we're on the same telekinetic path. If they don't, then all well and good. We don't have to worry about saying the same reason to each other. So who wants to go first on their stock up, stock down? Stock up two players.
Go on, Robin.
All right, I was just thinking about my downs. My stock up, number one, Tremaine Edmonds. It's one game. And he's, you know, he has had the occasional good game, but I thought he was absolutely magnificent. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. He was there. He was tackling. He was, you know, he played a big part in, you know, the Benford tackle as well. Again, it's team tackling as well. It's not just one guy. Other one, I mean, yeah, stock up because he didn't quite catch quite as many headlines. Russo, as well. I suppose it's difficult when you've got Von Miller and then you've got Jordan Phillips who would have been my guy from week one. Forgot Boogie Basham made a couple of nice players as well. So you know everyone's fighting for the attention, but I think we've got a real character in Russo and run defense as well.
Yeah,
he's
stock down. Get a time to think about your stock down, Mark. Who's your stock ups?
So first is the same as your second one there, Robin, Greg Rousseau. Phenomenal performance. Love the way he plays the game. Big guy, really hard to stop. And now they can't just focus on him.
Yeah.
Because you've got Von Miller off the other edge. It's almost like he's getting a free pass. It's wonderful. My other stock up is going to be Christian Benford. Really impressed with how he's performed. Wasn't expecting him to be the guy that got the nod with the injury to Trey. But I think in the first two games, from what I've seen, both from coverage and from open field tackling, he's been fantastic. Stopping the run, tackling in the open field receivers when they have caught the ball, coverage has been good. He has not missed a beat. Fifth round pick, unbelievable.
Six. I mean,
even better.
What a steal. What an absolute steal. Yeah,
ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, like him from a stock up, because, you know, it's very easy to say Josh Allen, but you can't go any higher on Josh Allen, can you? Christian Benford just keeps getting better.
Yeah. I think Benford's definitely my stock up, pretty much for the exact same reasons. My other one is actually is more of a collective one, and that's the offensive line.
Yeah,
I think even when they had Mitch Morse actually go down, Van Rooten actually did step in well. Okay, he had that stupid penalty on him, which I don't think was a penalty, to be honest.
Oh, was that the false start? Yeah, but like, I can't see how that wasn't a neutral zone infraction. I mean, they know the rules better than me, but I found that bizarre because he didn't look like he moved to me.
No, yeah. I think there was a slight movement from the defensive tackle. It's what I'm hearing, what I'm reading from the commentary. Slight movement by defensive tackle. He didn't go into the neutral zone. So Greg actually put his hand on the guy's helmet.
Yeah.
And that's what caused the penalty.
Whatever. That sounds rubbish to me.
No, I think the O-line for me is probably a stock up for this game because we know the Titans do have a stingy defensive line. They did open up some gaps for the running back, but it's the fact that Allen only was hit three times in that game. One was a sack. The fact that they actually managed to keep him healthy, keep him upright, and give him the time to ping those balls out really shows what Cromer has actually installed on it. And like last week against the Rams, the stock is still climbing because we're keeping our main man actually healthy and giving him time and giving the receivers time to use all the tricks of the trade and actually put them through and actually score the points. So they're my stock ups on there.
Can I have one honorable mention as well for Matt Milano in this game?
Go for it.
Just thought he played incredible, especially in that third quarter. Obviously, the pick six was the highlight, but just some of the plays, nearly had another interception, some of the open field tackling. He was everywhere in that third quarter. I thought he was really impressive.
Okay. Robin, stock down.
Always feels a little bit unfair. I'm racking my brains. I'm going to say Zach Moss. And I thought I'd get a bit more from him. He, by all accounts, he'd had this very good preseason. He'd had, been very impressive. And I thought he's completely fit. He's completely healthy. And done a couple of things, which is good. And I will say, I think the offensive line is still a work in progress. I accept everything that Mark was saying about setting up the pass. They're not going to be a Derrick Henry team. They're not going to be that sort of, not going to be a Jonathan Taylor Colts team. They're going to be a handful of decent runs. But I'm sure you guys check out, and any of the listeners, check out the Cover One podcast, the Cover One website, because they do some really interesting stuff on offensive run blocking, particularly with Saffold and particularly with Knox and also Morris as well, about how they set up the big runs for Singletary and Moss. So I think that will improve as it goes on. So they will get some decent runs, but it's not going to be their main thing. But yeah, would have liked to have seen a bit more from Zach Moss to this point.
Mark?
I don't know whether this is controversial or not, but I'm going to say Dawson Knox.
Okay.
I don't know, just like only one or two catches in week one. Only four catches for 41 yards. It's not terrible by any stretch of the imagination. But you know, when we're talking about stock downs, it's like, you know, it's like tiny little bit down. It's not much. I just think, given all the touchdowns last season, and the he was, especially red zone, he was Josh Allen's safety blanket. We just haven't seen it as much this year. But you know, he's not played badly by any stretch of the imagination. We're talking about he's, you know, 95 out of 100 rather than everyone else that's 110 out of 100. It's you know, it's hard to find anybody. So I think just only because I would like to have seen a little bit more out of him over the first 2 weeks, then that's probably why I would go Knox.
Yeah. Me, I'm going with, and this one's going to be a bit controversial as well.
Josh Allen.
Josh Allen, yeah, go on. Go on, stick with
that. It was actually Von Miller. It was Von Miller. No, Isaiah McKenzie.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Yeah.
Yes. You get all this. We had all the hype and what he did in preseason and training camp and all that. But the last 2 weeks, obviously apart from the touchdown he got last week, he hasn't really gained the trust of Dorsey McDermott to give him more plays and all that, or it's just the way he's actually been marked out. But he was third behind Diggs and Kumaro in the snap counts, with Kumaro actually having more snaps in that game on offense than Stephon Diggs.
Oh, that's interesting.
But he's only had four catches over two games.
Yeah, pretty much. And the fact that you've got Crowder, who's come in and made some decent plays when he's come in, shows that they're not really, are they really set in the slot? And is McKenzie really now, is there time for McKenzie to show that form that he showed in the offseason to actually go up and actually really dominate and become the Cole Beasley of this team, who now has gone over to the Bucks' practice squad, Cole Beasley? But
do you think there's a possible case of a kind of horses for courses thing, that Kumaro comes in basically as a swap for Davis and basically does the sort of the Gabe Davis role. And when you play teams that take away, that's even possible, and take away Davis, people like the Cole Beasleys and the Isaiah McKenzie's, like I'm thinking against the Patriots and to a certain extent again in the Chiefs games as well, and certainly Dawson Knox as well, that they become more involved once Davis and Diggs are taken care of. You can't block everyone. And if you're a Belichick, you know, he always says, well, I'll take Diggs away from you, see if you can beat me with your second best receiver. Okay. So to see if they can mark Davis out of the game. It's perhaps those sorts of games where your Kumaros and McKenzie's and Knoxes come in, when it's a take what they give you sort of game. But if you can beat them with digs over the top, well, you'll just do that until they stop you.
I think that's it. I think it's as much a change in strategy, because they probably did trust Cole Beasley as the slot receiver slightly more than they do Isaiah McKenzie yet. So I wonder if it's been more of a focus on outside threats with Diggs and Davis, or Diggs and Kumro. But like, Diggs has had nine catches in week one against the Rams, 12 catches in this game. And like, 12 catches, is the next highest was 4. So he's taking that's an awful lot of, that's an awful high percentage. And that's fair enough. He's probably the most, he's clearly the best wide receiver in the roster. He's one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. So of course you throw him the ball more. I think it's as much just he's had less opportunity, because we're spreading the ball around a lot. When he's throwing the ball to Diggs, Kumro, Knox, Gilliam, Crowder, Morris had a catch. Singletary had two catches, for crying out loud. When there's that number of options there, it's probably just it's a lack of opportunity through the way that the system, as much as anything. I think if he has a couple of really solid games, he'll probably look to get that trust. I don't necessarily think that Allen has gone into it thinking, I can't throw him the ball yet. He's not going to be that. He's just, Diggs is a better player, so I'll throw the ball to him.
Yeah. I think it could be numerous things. I mean, hopefully he will gain the trust, but I think he already has the trust of the...
Get the opportunities.
Yeah.
But we take the opportunities out of his hand, then say he gets another 5 throws. Well, that's 5 throws we're not throwing to Stephon Diggs. I'd rather throw the ball to Stephon Diggs.
That's true.
I'm happy if we throw to him every time. If he catches it, it's not a problem. Yeah, no one else catches a ball. All right, that's cool. It will happen. When you come up against coaching that is better than we've faced so far, And that's not to say Sean McVay and Mike Vrabel are bad coaches, but they're like, Sean McVay especially is an offensive mind. That will come up against coaches that will find a way to take Stephon Diggs out of the game. Mm. But that will mean that Isaiah McKenzie in those games will be targeted 6-7 times. And that's when you're going to start to see him get 80 plus yards.
Yeah. So let's move on. We got week 3 coming up. The 2-0 Bills against, surprisingly, the 2-0 Dolphins. And obviously, people listening, don't forget, if you're in Manchester or in that area, head up to Juniors up there. They're watching the game, or head down, if you're in London on South, head down to the Fitzrover Bell to watch the game there. But this is going to be an interesting matchup, I think. I mean, how shocked were you about the Miami's win against the Ravens?
I was very shocked, not to say chair falling off, surprised that the Ravens would give away a 35-14 lead going into the fourth quarter. It seems almost inconceivable that the Ravens, when you think Ravens, you think really good defense.
My fantasy team, they were my defense. So again, brilliant. No Josh Allen and them. I lost by 4 points and they got minus 3.
Yeah. It sounds churlish to say that Tua throws 6 touchdowns and it's because the Ravens gave it away. But he obviously he had a fantastic game, and good luck to him. And
he had so this is something that, again, I've covered on my other pod. I think everyone is creaming themselves about the Dolphins a little bit. They had a very good quarter.
Yes,
they had one quarter where they were excellent. The first three quarters, they looked pretty like kind of what everyone expected the Dolphins to look like. They were okay. They'd scored 14 points, but they didn't look brilliant by any stretch of the imagination. They didn't win this game. The Ravens absolutely threw it away by stopping playing. They thought they'd won, and they'd kind of took their foot off the gas. They still have to score the points. I get that. And they've got two very, very good, quick wide receivers. And I think that's potentially going to be our issue, given the injuries that we now have. But if we play as well as we can play, I still don't think the Dolphins cause us a problem, because anyone can play brilliantly for a quarter, but that isn't form that you can replicate match upon match upon match. That's a flash in the pan. Momentum is crazy on your side. All of a sudden, you know, they're starting to panic because they've scored 20 points this quarter, and all of a sudden there's a chance that we can't possibly throw this away. And that mentality gets into your head. And it was just one of those crazy games.
But yeah,
the Dolphins shouldn't have won this game, frankly. And they, in the first week, they played a really, really poor Patriots side. So I just, let's see what they're like when they play a property.
Yeah, you're not going to build a winning program conceding 38 points in a game, are you?
Like you said, and being 30 odd points down going into the final quarter, you're not going to win many games in that situation.
Yeah,
yeah.
So you guys then actually truly worried then with the injuries that we have, especially as both. Dane Jackson status is probably going to be up in the air. It's more likely he possibly would be out.
I'd be amazed if he plays. Amazing.
I think we're all just glad he's all right.
Glad he's not. Yeah, we're glad his head is still attached to his shoulders.
Because
Micah Hyde as well.
It looks very, very worrying indeed. And again, we talk about team spirit. Every single one of that roster was round him, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone was there.
Although I think everyone's cursing out Haskins, the Titans.
It was one of those. It's professional sports. These things. No one was trying to hurt anybody. I know what you mean now. Yeah, the bit after the thing.
Yeah. So when he was on top, I think on top, he was actually holding his neck, and then he just comes along, just shoves him to the side, rolls him over.
It's a heat of the moment thing. Yeah, everyone's in there. They're looking after their guys, don't they? The O-linemen are always straight in there, aren't they?
And so, he didn't know that there was anything bad had gone on. I just think it's like you said, heat of the moment, fog of war, these things happen. I can't say for sure that one of our team wouldn't have done exactly the same thing.
Yeah. So it's in a Gronk on white kind of bullshit.
That was just
a slightly careless, thing. Yes.
So would you be concerned then going into the game with Benford and Lamb as your starting cornerbacks? And there is even a question mark about Micah Hyde, who went out with a neck, but they're saying it's probably just like a stinger, so he might be good to go for the game. But would you feel comfortable?
No. I think I don't care who you are, how good you are, or how you're playing. I think if you're playing Tyreek Hill and Waddle, who I wasn't particularly high on, but I have been impressed with so far, if you're playing those with three of your four main secondary out injured, that's a problem. I don't care whoever comes in. That's a big problem, I think. Benford, I'm less concerned about, but he's not. Like, Cooper Kupp still had a good day against us. Tyreek Hill against those guys could potentially have a field day, considering if Hyde's not there, the other corner's not there, they're going to have a hell of a performance. And I'll tell you who's going to have a really good game is our defensive line is going to have to get to Tua early and often. Don't give him the time to let Hill and Waddle get into open space.
And that's where I think that I'm not too worried about it, because I know, and we've seen it against, the Titans had a pretty shitty O-line when Luan went out. But the Rams' offensive line is, not the best on there, but still a top unit. Yeah. And the amount of trouble we caused for them and Matthew Stafford shows me that I am not worried about potentially Jackson not being out there, because you've got Benford who's shown up as a sixth round pick. You've got Lamb who game by game is actually is starting to show signs of why he is that first round pick. But you've got two rookies who have got the guidance of Hyde and Poyer behind him. I mean, even Jaquan Johnson, I think him coming in, if he has to come in for Hyde to start, I don't see really much of a lapse in there. But I'm more comfortable the fact knowing what our front seven can do, and hopefully we have Ed Oliver and Tim settled back, so we just make them have to beat us in the air, which we know is our strongest point. And last season, we did it without... We did play games and won games without Trey White, without Dane Jackson, Levi Wallace on a couple of occasions. Okay, one of them always in at one point.
But we don't often we don't often stop Tyreek Hill, though.
Yeah.
If you never we never stop him.
If you're looking for reasons for optimism, I think Trey White would probably struggle to stop Tyreek Hill. I think he's going to be one of those guys that at the very least is going to get you 14 to 21 points with his catches. So in a way, it's the Benford and Elam are almost playing with house money in that they are both rookies. If they have a slightly iffy game, no one's going to hold it against them because they're rookies and it was Tyreek Hill, and better cornerbacks than them are going to struggle against them. But to pick up on what you said about D-line, got a couple of things I was just reading earlier today. They have the second highest Bills, have the second highest pressure rate in the league, and they've only blitzed three times across the two times. So it's all about bringing that pressure with four. If they can bring the pressure with four and put it onto Tua, like we've been saying, and I think I say it every week, it takes the pressure off the cornerbacks and do it. They can win it essentially with the D-line and with, shall we say, the measured, methodical offensive plays, which may bring in McKenzie and Crowder, and you know the slightly slower ones. If they can just maintain the possession and bring pressure on Tua, even without Hyde, even without White and Jackson missing people, I think the Bills are so deep in so many places they will have enough to win.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm looking at the injury report for today. Gabe Davis was back with limited on there, but I can't see this Dolphin defense, no matter how much people are saying that they're good enough, they've got a couple of decent players in there, especially Xavon Howard and all that.
But yeah, good secondary, but I think we can beat them.
You're looking at their stats this year and the last two games, that they're allowing an NFL worst 9 yards per attempt.
Nice.
Per pass attempt. Third worst passer rating, 114.4. Fifth worst completion percentage is 71.2, and tied and only managed two sacks. So
fine, let Josh cook then.
So we'll
just score 40, and that'll be enough. Brilliant.
I can easily see the Dolphins getting to 21, maybe even 24 if you know things go well. But I can't see them stopping the Bills from getting less than 30, which is circling around to what we said at the beginning. I can easily see the Bills getting up to 40 because they just can. While I can't see the Dolphins getting at the very most 24. So
one other stat is that I can't remember what quarter it was. I think maybe in the last game, but the Dolphins have given up more points in one quarter, in one single quarter, which was 21 points, than the Bills have in eight quarters this season, which is only 17. So I'm not worried too much about this defense, about this game. I think you talk to many people, they are going to be worried the fact that you've got two rookies potentially having to cover Waddle and Hill, but we see how they play. They like to play and they play off soft coverage that actually try and get everyone in front. So they'll give them the 5-10 yards in front, but they're always going to try and stop that long one. And if they can continue doing that as their defense and actually just squeeze them as soon as they get the ball, then squeeze them, I think that will neutralize these long plays. And I just don't think we'll give Tua enough time to release those balls. And
I still don't think Tua is very good.
No,
I know it seems stupid when you talk about he had 6 touchdowns in a game, but I'm not convinced with him at all. And I think you get pressure in his face, and I like to think I'm going to call it now, 3 interceptions.
Yeah.
Who's going to get?
I think that's a good call. He's a little loose. He's not a team. Put the team on his back. Not yet.
Who's going to get them? Let's say Matt Milano.
Okay.
Is going to get one. and Ilam's going to get his first one.
Hey, cool.
And Benford's going to get one.
All right, and the two rookie corners. Nice.
No, sorry, no, not Benford. Poy is going to get one.
That's fair enough. I mean, the one good thing, well, the one thing that I think most Bills, well, it's not really Bills fans will actually know this or want it, but the Bills have actually, with the last game, and it's a stat, with a question that I'm going to ask you, see if you know, if not, I'm going to put it out to Twitter. The Bills obviously have equaled the NFL record set by the Chicago Bears in 1941-42 of 20 consecutive wins of 10-plus points. So the last time we actually, the streak started in week 9 of the 2020 season, when the Bears did it in 41-42, the last game in 1940, they made history by crushing Washington in the NFL championship game. Do you know what the score was?
Oh, wow. That's your question. What was the final score in the 1940
championship
game?
Yeah.
I don't know. It would be a guess.
Well, then, put in a guess.
I'm going to put in a guess. It was 13-6.
No. It's actually a lot more than that.
Really?
I'm going to say, because obviously it's by more than 10 points, because that's the point of the
start. Oh, shit, sorry. I thought that was the time. I thought that was when their streak, that was the last one.
Read the question.
Can I try again?
Go for it.
Well, I've got to say, because you said it's a lot more, so I won't take the piss too much. 21-10.
No.
35-3.
Okay. No. What I'm going to do, I'm going to put it out on Twitter. If anyone knows the answer, great. If they don't get it by the time we do the review show, I will actually give the answer on there.
I'm guessing you could just Google this and we'd find out in 5 or 10 seconds.
Probably could.
Okay, just.
Let me. I'm going to get a load of people actually say the right answer because they've actually,
just
inverted commas, Googled it. Let's just say that. They beat Washington 73-0.
Wow.
73-0. Oh, blimey.
73-0 in the NFL Championship game. And that started off their run of 20 consecutive 10 plus. Point wins.
Right. So are you saying then, Matt, that we're going to win the Super Bowl 73-0 against the whoever it is, and there'll be that beautiful symmetry? That's going to be our last game of our winning by more than 10 points. That's the prediction you're making here right now.
The prediction I'm making.
There you go. Bills beat the Buccaneers 73-0 in the Super Bowl.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wouldn't that ever be sweet?
But no, I think it's going to be a good game. I think it's a Sky game as well, so we actually get a nice time to watch it this time rather than
an unexpectedly tougher game than I think we probably thought it was going to be at the start of the season, given how they've started. We'll see. If we were at full strength, I would be like pounding the table that it's like we're going to bring them back down to earth. I think they can cause us trouble just because we're not at full strength, but I still think we take the win.
Yeah, Robin.
I'm actually a bit more. I think we'll get one or other of Oliver and Saddleback. I think Poirier will be okay. Milano looks ready to go. So we've still got Edmonds. I think Dane Jackson's probably out. I think Dawson Knox will probably come back. So really, we'll be missing Dane Jackson, possibly Ed Oliver, someone else I'm overlooking. So I think we'll have enough in depth to do it. So I don't think we'll notice a huge, huge drop off. So my score prediction, if you want it, 38-20. 38-20. Bills.
38-20. Okay. I think I know it's going to be a win. I'm not worried about what Hill and Waddle did against the Ravens. I was speaking to the UK Ravens Twitter group, who ironically for the week four matchup against the Bills actually had the back room down the Fitzrover Bell. So hopefully it's going to be a rallying cry today for next week to get as many people down there as possible. We won't start a bar fight because we have the Bell, but obviously outshine them. But speaking to them, they weren't that shocked because they claimed they had no healthy bodies. They missing had three rookies trying to cover Hill and Waddle. I just think they were just making up
that rings a bell.
making up excuses on there. But I think the one thing we need, if we have Hyde, if he's fit and he's actually playing, I think it's going to be a more comfortable win. But if he's a doubt or if he's not playing, I think it's more of your squeaky bum win. I still think either way we will win. I just think Hyde will make that difference, whether it is a big win or a small win. But either way, we're going into week four as a 3-0 team. Probably one of the last remaining 3-0 teams in this in the league, which is shocking. Come week two, there's only like six teams now that are actually unbeaten, and two of them face each other on Sunday.
Yeah. And the other one's the Giants.
So yeah, right. Well, their luck's going to run out at some point. You expect right Chiefs will probably get a win as well, won't they? A few other teams will fall.
Yeah, but I think it's going to be great. So as I say, get down to the Fitzrover Bell, get down to Junior Jackson's up in Manchester. I think there is somewhere in Nottingham, I think, that they've actually got a game showing or they've got meetups in there. I need to find that details and I'll post them up there. But get along to them, meet other Bills fans, obviously interact with us on all social media, UK_Bills, Buffalo Bills UK, Robin
C. Armstrong,
Mark at
This Is Sparky S,
me with Matt SW86, and all we can really say is keep following, supporting, subscribing to us. Give us all your feedback. And for Robin, Mark, Matt saying good morning, good afternoon, good evening, thank you for listening, and let's go Buffalo Bills.
Go Bills.
Don't know anything about heart. You know anything about work? Huh? That's who we are. Bills on three. One, two, three.